Welcome to Digitally Creative. I'm your host, Vincent Ferrari, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, but my guest this week is the one, the only, the legend, Bobby Duke. What's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, wow. That's quite the introduction. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing great, actually. It's been a whole day of, oh my God, this is really going to happen tonight. This is really going to happen tonight. Now here it is.
Well, don't be too excited. I usually don't say a whole lot of profound things, so we'll see what happens.
So for those of you that didn't hear my giddy excitement after Maker Camp last year, Bobby and I met at Maker Camp, which is another reason you should go to Maker Camp, because you never know who you're going to bump into there. And we had a little conversation. I was like, hey, you want to come on the podcast? And scheduling things got in the way for both of us, but we finally ended up making it happen. And here we are, just about on the cusp of another Maker Camp, which I'm wondering, are you going to be there again this year?
Probably. I'd really like to. It just kind of depends on schedule and stuff. When is it exactly?
So I think it's the second weekend of October.
October. I don't think much is going on October. Wait.
Here we go.
Isn't it the annular eclipse is happening sometime in October. Hopefully it doesn't coincide exactly on that date.
Hitting the Google frantically right now.
Yeah. Yeah, there's an annular eclipse this year and then a total eclipse in next year. I'm assuming you've heard of it. It's
the 2024 one. It's going to be in August of 24, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
August 8th, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm super pumped for that one too.
Cool. You're like an eclipse lover, like, the glasses, get the telescope, all that stuff, or
I don't get the telescope, but definitely the glasses. Like the last one in 2017, I drove like 800 miles to go see.
Oh, wow.
I'm not a hobbyist into astronomy. Like I don't have a telescope, but I love astronomy, the topic. So I love learning all about it. I think space is such a weird and crazy place. It has literal what we would consider sci-fi stuff, but that's actually real, like happening, you know, in space. It's just really fascinating to me. So yeah, also if you've seen an eclipse, then you'll know how epic it is.
It was pretty amazing. The last one was the first solar eclipse that I ever like experienced. Well, at least that I know I experienced. I mean, who knows if there was one when I was younger or whatever, but that was the first one I ever experienced. And even looking at it through some cardboard glasses that are properly tinted, it was still an amazing experience. Like they actually gave us some time off at work so we could go outside and look at it. And they gave some of us glasses and some of us brought piles of them. And we're all standing outside like, whoa. You just realize, and you know, it's not to get too philosophical, but man, the vastness of space and how insignificant we are in it really starts to come home when you start realizing what's going on in the universe.
Yeah, it just feels like it felt to me like a weird, like a movie set. I mean, did you experience the total, like totality, the complete black, you know, darkness of the sky and everything?
We were pretty close to the band where that is. Like we were close enough where it got a little bit darker.
Okay.
It didn't get like crazy dark like it did in some places, but it was still... it was noticeable.
Okay, so I gotta say that if you haven't seen it in the path of totality, then it is literally night and day, no pun intended. But like the difference, because you will still see, I mean, it does get a little bit darker. It almost looks like, feels like you have sunglasses on or something.
Right.
And you look at the crescent shape, you know, the crescent shapes all over the ground, you know, from the sun going through the leaves or the trees or something like that. But full totality is it is totally different than an almost. There's either total or you didn't see the total.
Right.
And it sounds like you were just outside. You should have driven
just outside. Like, I mean, like close enough. I mean, I think we would have had to go 6 or 7 hours west in New York to see it. And so it was enough. I could still see a tiny little bit of sun. Like, yes, I was definitely not where you were.
Right.
But even from where I was, it was impressive. So I can only imagine, like,
oh yeah.
So in the middle of it.
So essentially you gotta go and see this one mm-hmm. in 2024. Even if you have to drive 6 or 7 hours, it is worth it. It is one of those experiences where, like, I don't know, for me it was like super emotional and very just powerful and weird all at the same time. Like, it was incredible. Like, the actual In the Path, because it gets, the stars come out, it's so dark, right. The stars come out in the middle of the day.
I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, I guess that makes sense.
There's you a basically 300, the night sky. 360 degree sunset all along the horizon with just a glow of red, and then the night sky in the middle of the day, and then this jet black spot with the sun's corona blasting out, and either it is totally different than
that's like wild.
Being in the path versus not being the path, it's totally different. So you got to make the trip.
Okay, you've convinced me. You've convinced
anyone
me.
Listening? Yeah, I'm so pumped.
It was hard at the last one because, like, if you didn't make your reservations like ages in advance, like maybe you could have caught it on the side of a road somewhere, but that was the best you were going to do, because everywhere along the belt was completely booked up. And I loved watching the news reporters, like, they were just jumping town to town to town, like, yep, we're in the belt, and you can see that there's thousands and thousands of people already here waiting. And they were getting there like early in the morning, because it started like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, if I remember correctly.
Midday sometime. Yeah, I don't remember exactly.
It was such a cool experience. Man, it sounds like a much cooler experience what you went through. So
you gotta go see the total. Also, we didn't even book a hotel in the path. I'm pretty sure we just got something, because that's what's cool about an eclipse. You don't mm-hmm. have to be anywhere specific. I was right. in a Walmart parking lot. We're literally going to be on the side of the road in a field for this next one, and I live in the path of totality. So going to drive to the center of the path of totality, because if you're in the center, then you experience it longer. There's a longer period of the shadow going over. So we should expect somewhere close to 5 minutes of darkness. When the one I saw in Kentucky was, I think it was like 2.5 minutes, but still amazing. It's also going to be darker. So the longer the shadow, the wider the shadow, the deeper the darkness in the center of it, of the shadow. So it'll be darker and longer.
I love seeing you geeking out about this, because you're well known as an artist, a maker, a super creative guy, a YouTube personality, and you're geeking out over an eclipse, and that just makes me so happy. Like, I love when you find that thing that ignites people, and you're definitely, like, this has really got you, and I'm very excited by this.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 2017 since I saw my last one, so, and I'm still mm-hmm. this excited. I've been getting more excited. I've been waiting for 2024 the day after 2017, you know, the day mm-hmm. after that eclipse. And yeah, I love astronomy, just natural wonders and beauty. Like, I recently went to California. We had a trip to Japan that kind of got messed up, the trip, because, long story short, my adult daughters didn't get their passports in time, so we had to kind of make different plans, which was going to California. And we went to Yosemite, and we went to not the Redwoods, but the Sequoia National Park. Wow. And saw the giant sequoias, like General Sherman and the other massive trees. That was almost on par as an eclipse for me. Like, just the trees sitting there. And I felt horrible, because some people came up that recognized me. Walked up to the base of General mm-hmm. Sherman, and I'm like, you know, could not just wrap my mind around how amazing it was. Mm-hmm. And I had some viewers, fans, whatever, come up, and I was like, you know, I felt like kind of a jerk, because I was so distracted by this tree. And I'm like, no, don't look at me. Look at the tree. There's a freaking huge tree there. So it was an interesting, it was fun, but,
there's a legendarily large tree behind me.
Like,
stop looking at the YouTuber.
yeah. Look at the daggum freakishly huge, cartoonishly big tree in front of me. Yeah, no, but they were super cool. But I just thought that was an interesting experience, where I was like, literally like, you know,
Did you feel a little bit of remorse for having cut up so much wood in your life after seeing that tree? Did you feel like it was going to make up for all the little wood that you'd cut up?
No, most of the wood, and it was funny, is I say wood sometimes around my family, and they're very quick to correct me if I get it wrong. But most of the time, the wood that I get my hands on is either scrap or cut off, or a lot. I have some friends that are in the arborist industry, the tree trimming industry, and they will remove a dead tree or whatever, and I'll go and get chunks of it from them. Mm-hmm. So no, I don't feel bad, because I typically don't. I do buy some wood, and I have in some of my videos, but a lot of it is either free or, you know,
like reclaimed urban lumber, that kind of stuff. Chopped trees and so on.
It is, what's crazy to me is, so those trees, the sequoias and even the redwoods, a lot of them, there's only, I think the Redwood National Forest, there's only 4% left. So 96% has been cut down through forestry from like the 1920s and 30s and stuff like that, primarily to make, and this is all stuff that I've learned while I was there at the parks, but primarily to make fence posts and roof shingles.
Oh, jeez.
Can you believe it?
It's
just
horrible.
Crazy. Just crazy to imagine, if you've been there, to think that someone would, you know, rationalize, justify cutting down a tree like that for any reason, but especially that.
It's like when you find out they're strip mining the tops off mountains to get to like lithium and cobalt and stuff, and it's like, oh,
yeah,
for a battery that's going to last 3 years that you're going to throw away anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of... I also find it ironic, like a lot of the grocery stores will either charge you for bags, or there's like a bag, they won't give you plastic bags, you know.
You can't get them in New Jersey at all anymore. They don't. There's
same in California. But in the store, everything is packaged in plastic. So it's like, wait a second, what is the purpose of it? Is it like, what's happening here, you know?
It's like a lot of the stores, you know, they'll give you a paper to go box for your food. But if they're prepackaged at the store, it's shrink wrapped. It's like, wait a minute, hold on. If it was plastic, then you would just have the plastic wrap. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Oh, I could go. I could.
It's
go
amazing
on and on about all the weird hypocrisies in the world and the weird just stuff happening.
I always laugh at Starbucks is one of my favorite, like, what the hell targets, because Starbucks will tell you that the napkins that you get at Starbucks are printed on 100% recycled paper. But then they print on them with green ink, which means they're spinning up two machines. You know, they have one machine to make the napkin, then they have another one to print on them. And it's like,
to tell you that it's
maybe you don't
bad.
Have to print your name on the damn napkin. We can assume that if we're at Starbucks, that that's a Starbucks napkin. It's okay. You don't have to have branded napkins. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. All kinds of stuff.
So one of the things that I've always been curious about, and one of the reasons I was so looking forward to talking to you, is I feel like we know a lot about where you are now in your artistic journey. Probably not every detail, because you're a very private person, and I think that's really awesome. I like that about you. But I've always been curious about your origin story, because I don't feel like I know it. I don't feel like I've ever heard it. I don't feel like you've ever really told it. Like, how did you get started with making, and how did you get so skilled at so many different disciplines? Because I've seen you do everything from woodworking to sculpting to, I feel like there's almost nothing you can't do. And I'm not just fanboying here, but based on your catalog of videos, you've done a lot of different things, and you do them all really well. So what's your background? How did you get started, and how did you get the ball rolling on what's been a pretty amazing career?
Well, thank you. I don't, it's funny, cause you call me a maker, and I tell people I'm an artist, but I know maker and art can kind of overlap, or definitely do. As far as like I almost categorize them differently in my head though, when it comes to me, because my art journey and making, the making side of it, because there's a lot of similar skills involved in both, are two kind of separate things. So art started from as long as I can remember. So I've always been interested in three-dimensional art ever since I was a little kid. Started by, you know, whittling little daggers around a campfire for my friends, like when camping and stuff, you know, and I ended up being able to do it pretty well. And the my friends were all like super psyched, you know, I'd make them make a knife or whatever and hand it to one of the boys and they'd run around, you know, it was just like, I got that sort of thrill that people liked what I was making. And so that encouraged me to keep up with it. But then my parents kind of saw that I had a knack for it and enrolled me in like an art class with a lady who is still an artist. Her name is Judy Sager. She does sculpting and painting, but that's where I got kind of the groundwork laid for technique or the way to look at things, you know, shading. I started typically, you know, with drawing, but then kind of transitioned into sculpting. So ever since I was a little kid, as far as purely art, but as far as like working with tools and woodworking and making and more of that side of it, started, when I was younger as well. My first job was, well, besides like before I was legally allowed to work, but my first job, I think at 16, was working at a cabinet shop that did high end, like they were known for like high end, anything goes custom bespoke cabinets. Oh, wow. So, I learned a lot about how to work with wood, how to use table saws, you know, band saws, planers, joiners, you know, all, routers, belt sanders, you know, all the tools and stuff and how to use them safely. And then just the way wood works and how mm-hmm. to work it, you know? So I also fell in love with wood, you know, in that time, just how beautiful it was and just the properties of it and how there were so many different species and stuff. So that got my interest in that. But I also did remodeling. I did faux painting, tile, even did tree trimming for a while. I did a tattoo. It was a tattoo artist briefly, truck driver and stuff, you know, so like little things, from basically every job other than maybe truck driving, you know, I just sort of picked up different skills that I applied to art. And as far as working, I've been talking for a long time. You want to say something?
No, I'm enjoying it. My goal is to do a 1 hour and 20 minute podcast and say 5 minutes worth of things. So by all means.
Okay, cool. As far as like, there has been a developmental journey through art and working mm-hmm. with my hands and stuff, but I don't really practice. You know, it's one of those things that I've always just kind of had a knack for that I've been able to just sort of do. That's where the argument of talent and hard work comes up. You know, that people, there's this debate on if you say, wow, they're talented, that's somehow insulting and demeaning the amount of or belittling the work that they put into it. I haven't really worked at it. I've learned things, you know, as I've grown, but I mean, I've always just been able to kind of do it to some level. And so, yes, the abilities that I've developed and I did develop, that's the thing is like, it's a weird thing. Cause I totally understand it. I'm acknowledging the work that I have put into it.
Sure. Sure.
But there's, I don't know, like I'm able to work with stuff that I've never worked with before ever for the first time. And I put a lot of thought in, basically, I think it's not even an ability. It's more a way to an understanding of how things work mm-hmm. and properties and cause and effect. And I don't know if I'm making any sense, but like, I think my ability to plan out sequence of events and how to accomplish my end goal, and then breaking it down into little bitty steps, which any of them by themselves are simple, when all added together, create the finished piece. I think I'm able to do that more efficiently than some people, sure. I don't know. It's a weird thing when it comes to like talent and hard work. And yes, I've worked hard, but I also have always just kind of been able to do it.
There's kind of like this inherent knack for figuring things out on the fly. Right. And you're also really good.
My job is problem solving.
Yeah. Your process, like when you were doing, you did a couple in a row of like carving river rocks. And I was fascinated by that because that always felt like an unachievable process for just the average person. Like, how do people carve these rocks? And you just kind of, you know, your diamond Dremel bits and your diamond burrs, and you basically go into your shop and like, here, look, this is how easy it is. We're going to do this because this is what happens. We're going to do this. We're going to keep it wet. And it's like, and you can buy the burrs really cheap on Amazon. You buy a whole set of them. You have every shape you need. And it's like, wow, you just made something I thought was like super scary and intimidating, very approachable. And then watching you do it so well also makes me want to try it, because it's like, oh, I can achieve that too. You know, maybe I could get there.
Right. And I think that is more an ability not to be able to do something, but just to understand the process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was able to wrap my head around the process. Like, you know, that's a great example where you're like, you know, it's just something you never thought you'd attempt because it's some sort of big skill you need or lots of tools. Some sort of
school
you need to go to rock carving school. And I just saw it and was like, well, you know, they sell these consumer grade burrs that are diamond, and they, you know, diamond cuts rock. And, you know, I just put the pieces together.
I love watching the way you go through short phases with your videos, and it's always interesting. Like, you went through a phase where you were carving a lot of rocks. You went through a phase where you're doing a lot of polymer clay sculpting and stuff like that. You went through a phase where you're making little weapons and tools out of bolts and stuff. And it's like each one gets more refined. Do you do them in a series like that? Because you're like, okay, that was the first one. I really want to nail the second one. And like, you want to, or is it just, I just want to make that. Like, is there a reason you tend to batch things together like that? Or is it just the way your mind works?
I think it's more, I can't stick with one thing for too long or I'll get sort of burned out or bored on it. Mm-hmm. Like, I could never do, like, be the guy who just does the thing, mm-hmm. the one thing. I have to constantly entertain myself with what I'm making. And there, you know, part of it is if a video does really well and it's something I enjoy making anyways, might as well do a couple of them, you know, kind of ride the wave of the people that are interested in that topic. But I'm typically interested in it for a couple of videos worth. But that's why I like going back to, I'm going to be doing a future video as another rock carving video, but it's with it's a different twist.
Okay.
And it has other elements like sculpture and resin as well. So there's ways that I like take older ideas and then try to turn them into new things that make me interested in it again. It's mainly just, there's a lot of factors, my interest in it, and also audience response. Those two factor in.
I was actually going to ask you that, because I think part of the reason, you know, and I'm just, you know, looking at your channel, having watched it for as long as I have, you have about 4.5 million subscribers at this point. And I wonder if you've probably cracked the code, because where everyone is being told, you know, niche down, stay in a specific lane, you're just like, no, I make art. That's my lane, art. Like, it's like, you never know what you're going to get. It's a new Bobby Duke video. It's not a new Bobby Duke makes a cutting board video. You know, it's
right. Well, yeah. I mean, art is such a broad category, which is why I have arts. You know, I didn't want to sort. Actually, originally my original channel was called Duke Wood Carving. And then I was like, you know, I like more than just wood carving, so I don't want to pigeonhole myself into one specific, like, make that too narrow. So I broadened it to just arts, so it would allow me to, you know, hey, it's a wood carving channel and you're sculpting, you know.
Yes, I am.
Polymer clay or whatever. You know, so, I'm glad, because, I mean, I love art and I love making it, and that's why I started basically the channel in the first place, was just kind of document what I was doing, and then it turned into something way bigger down the road. But
when you got, because you've worked with some big other YouTubers, which is wild. And I think the most surprising one to me, and I was sitting on my couch, my ex-wife was sitting next to me. We were watching because I was not allowed to watch your videos without her. I had to watch them. Her and I had to watch your videos together because she adores you also. And cool. We used to sit there and watch your videos. And we also watched 1000's videos. And when he was doing the world's largest art collab, the first one. And, you know, we were getting to the end and I was following it along and I was literally subscribing to every single person who worked on it. Oh, and cool. He gets it back and he's like, well, we need an epic frame for this. And it's like, and he's like, I know just the person, and it was you. And I swear we both just went, ah! You know, it was like this great big moment, like, holy crap, Bobby Duke is perfect to do this. And then you absolutely blew minds with the crystals that you put on the frame. Like, you took this beautiful two-dimensional painting that everyone had done some wild stuff on, and you added dimensionality to it, essentially, because it was a painting and now it has these amazing crystals and they light and they're beautiful, and it didn't take away from the art at all. It just looked like it belonged there. How did it feel to get how did it feel when Peter asked you to collaborate, and did you feel any pressure having to kind of put that together on something that was so amazing to begin with?
Well, of course I was excited. You know, Peter reached out. I actually didn't know if I was going to be able to, I think in the beginning. And it was one of those things where, yeah, he asked me, I said, I think so, to kind of schedule dependent. And then it was like, yes, I can do it. But then that's when the weight of it, like, oh crap, I actually have to make this thing.
What did I just say yes to?
Yeah. But no, I was excited and honored, you know, to be a part of such a big collaboration, you know. Mm-hmm. Multiple countries and lots, I forget, 7 artists or something like that. But the hardest part was, and I'm glad you said it didn't overpower the painting, was to do something unique and not just a lame old frame, because that's not interesting to me, but also no one would care if I'm
in your head. Like, in your head, you must have known that he wasn't asking you to make a frame. Right? Like, you had to know that he wasn't going, oh no, I need Bobby Duke to make me like a frame. No, he wants Bobby Duke to make a Bobby Duke frame.
Right. No, he did. He was like, basically, you do whatever you want and just make some epic frame. So I knew that it was never going to be just a generic frame. But yeah, that was the hard part, was trying to make something crazy enough that it, but I'm glad it accomplished what you just said, which was
absolutely
didn't take away, but added to it. It felt like a part of the original idea or concept and piece. You know, I tried to match sort of the color scheme, but also add the
wood.
That
was the most impressive part, that you matched the color scheme. Like, it was, cause that's what made it look integrated into the artwork instead of something that was slapped on at the end. Like, that was the clincher.
Right. And there was no pigment at all added to that. If you remember, I used dichroic plastic film.
Like that, yeah, that crunchy, the crunchy plastic film.
Yeah, it's like a cellophane. That is there, and that's not a pigment. That's just like a surface. If I remember correctly, it's a molecular surface texture that refracts the light a specific way. And so there's no pigment in any of the colors. It's all just the way the light's reflecting on the dichroic plastic inside the thing. That I thought was kind of a cool, that I was able to get those colors in there without, there's no pink, it's clear resin. The resin.
Yeah. And
clear.
It's not opaque because you did it that way. And that's what's amazing about it. Like, it's not these blocks of like pigmented resin, which I'm sure would look fine, but it wouldn't look right. You know?
Right. Yeah. So I was excited and I'm happy with it, the way it turned out. I don't know. I was thinking, man, this thing's pretty crazy. Hopefully it's not going to take away or distract or whatever. But no, I think it in the end worked. It was pretty nuts, though. The weird. I also like asymmetry. I like symmetrical, but on that, I really wanted the asymmetry to it.
You definitely. I mean, the fact that it took 2 videos, by the way, was also like, because you finished the first one, I'm like, okay, where are we going? Where are we going? We're done? No. We're not. We can't be done. And then there was the second video shortly after, and it's like, oh man, this is just so good. Like it was, and then everybody, you know, I feel like if you've worked with resin, you now start, and this is why it pays to watch an artist like you do their thing, because I watch that and I go, oh, using that film to color resin instead of making solid blocks of color. That's an idea. Like file that one in the back of your head. And now I see people doing it all the time, but until you did it, I had never seen anyone do it. So,
well, I wasn't the first person. I can't remember where I saw someone doing that, but it was like probably an Instagram reel or something, and I was like, that's an interesting take. So I wasn't the very first person. But yeah, it is kind of interesting because
it was unique at the time.
It changes color too, depending on what angle you look at it. Like, one crystal will have a predominantly sort of greenish hue, then you turn it slightly, and then the colors, because of the dichroic nature of the plastic, it then will reflect more purples, like a contrasty purple, like totally different shades will come through. And some of them, honestly, the ones that I really like are the ones that kind of do a spectrum of colors.
Yes. You managed to catch that in the thumbnail really good, which is kind of cool. The thumbnail for the second video is fantastic.
Yeah, filming or taking a picture of and recording it is pretty hard to get to where it looks like it actually looks in real life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thanks. It worked hard in trying to get a good picture of it.
And I love that you do this two-part epic like art project, that whole frame, and then the next video is you making a wacky anime weapon and going to a shooting range with it. It's like, this is why like the madness of you is like so addictive, because it's like, yeah, he's doing a cosplay in a gun range. Okay, cool. Yeah, let's go do that now.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a very much just like me. Mm-hmm. I'm very bouncing around on subjects. Like this month I'm really into entomology. I'm collecting a full set of each species of insect that lives around my house, and I'm creating like shadow boxes. You know how you pin insects, then they dry, and then you can put them in a shadow box, and I'm going to have the scientific name with the common name underneath each one. But then I was into horology a few months before that. That's the study of like the working on mechanical clocks or watches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it may also apply to digital, but like pocket watches, super into pocket watches for a while. So it's kind of it's just the way I am, you know. I'm super flighty when it comes to my interests, which can have its drawbacks, because I end up with a lot of stuff and junk pertaining to each one of my hobbies. Also, RC is a hobby, you know, RC planes and cars, weather, bonsai trees, astronomy. There's a long list.
What a range of stuff.
But like I said, it can be kind of almost stressful in a way, because I'm constantly having to like shift focus, and not having to, but it's like it does it automatically. My brain will shift focus to a new topic that I'll hyper fixate on for several months and then move on to something else. A lot of times I will come back to an older topic, and thankfully I'll have all the stuff for it ready, you know, because I've saved it. But like right now, all my watch repair stuff is just kind of sitting, waiting for me to come back to it. Right now I'm pinning bugs, you know, but like you said, that I'm glad it makes it interesting, but it's in a way it can be kind of a drawback. You know, I wish I could just sometimes focus, you know, and stay focused on something.
I totally understand it though, because like I didn't realize how much I did that. Until I moved into this apartment, and in my last house was where my shop and my craft room were. And I realized what I had accumulated over the prior 5 or 6 years. And I realized how many times my interests took a right or a left turn. And it's like, oh, you have polymer clay and soap making stuff, and woodworking tools and like diamond burrs and a whole bunch of rocks. And it's like, yeah. you know, you start to realize like, wow, I am just, I'm not. And I know that it's a bad thing to just collect tools and supplies and not actually do the thing. But I've gone back to a lot of those things over the years and gone, oh, I think I'm ready to try that now. I'm ready to do that now. I'm ready to really dive into that now. And I totally understand it. It's funny, you sound a lot like, and I'm not trying to put myself on your level, don't get me wrong, but I understand where you're coming from because I kind of work the same way. It's like, oh, I want to get into that. Okay, what do I need to get into that? Get that, get the stuff put aside. Okay, I'll get to that now.
Yeah.
I'll get to it. And then a couple months down the line, I'll go, you know, I bought all that stuff. Maybe I should give it a go.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I can rationalize divulging or not divulging, but buying stuff, tools, whatever materials for a specific hobby, because I eventually will full circle back around to it and my interest like will be peaked. Like every spring, my interest in bonsai is rejuvenated because everything comes out of dormancy and then I can work on them and I get really into them and stuff. I have a big collection in the backyard that I've been working on and, but yeah, it's like every year, you know, winter comes around, I basically lose interest because there's nothing really to do on them. But then they're there again in the spring.
It's like, oh, look at you.
But like the watch stuff, I know eventually I'll come back to fixing and working on watches, you know, so.
I bought a whole bunch of better electronics repair stuff than what I had. And I repaired a whole bunch, like I repaired like a Simon, you know, from the 80s, the game with the four buttons. I repaired two of those. I repaired a Coleco football. I repaired like a Coleco tabletop game. And I just was repairing them just because it was fun to do, like buying them super cheap on eBay and fixing them, making them work again. I haven't done that in a while, but I know that if I were to just see one come across my transom on eBay now, it's like, oh, I have everything I need. I can just go work. I can buy it and work on it. I don't need to acquire more tools. You know, I don't need to acquire more things to make that happen.
Hobby, you just kind of put it on standby until the interest gets piqued again. Have you seen the channel Toy Polloi?
I love Toy Polloi.
Okay,
amazing, absolutely.
Yeah. I love watching him repair retro toys, and it's just interesting. His techniques and getting it back to.
I love how much he uses. It's really funny because at the beginning of some of the videos, he has a disclaimer that says, warning, parental warning, Lego destruction ahead. And it's like, oh, he's going to fix something with Lego. And it's amazing how much he fixes with Lego parts. It's incredible.
I know. He just like snaps stuff together or whatever. Or he'll recreate a joint or something inside internally, you know, use Lego.
I showed a friend of mine, he did a video on how to restring the legs on a G.I. Joe. And because the rubber bands, you know, over time, those rubber bands, they just start to disintegrate.
Yeah.
And I sent, my friend had said, he had a whole like big Ziploc bag full of his G.I. Joes from when he was a kid. And he's like, but they're all, you know, and like, and he would hold them up and like, they're all in multiple pieces. I'm like, I got the guy for you. And I sent him the Toy Polloi video. I'm here, watch this. And he fixed all of them. Like he sat there over the course of a weekend just fixing all his G.I. Joes from when he was a kid. And I was like, see, this is why these videos are worth watching. Like, even if I'm not good, I don't have any of my G.I. Joes, but like, look how much joy it brought him to fix all of them, you know?
Yeah. And I love watching videos that I have nothing to do with, you know, like I'm not into a specific field or whatever. I watch, well, like I'm not a scientist, but I love watching science videos, you know? Clickspring. He's another channel. Or
his machines are incredible.
Yeah, This Old Tony is another great one. Where these guys are machinists and working on with precision lathing and metal and things. And I don't own any of those tools or machines. And I mean, it's maybe one day, who knows? But I love watching precision stuff too. Like people get really geeked out and working on tedious things. Cause it's funny because like if anyone were to guess, you know, do I like working on tedious, like things that take hours and hours and hours of focus?
I would never guess. Yeah.
But it's one of my favorite things to do is to sit for hours getting all crazy anal about some tiny details. I don't know, because it's one of the ways that I can truly focus and mm-hmm. truly quiet all the everything else in my head. And I'm not thinking about anything other than that moment and mm-hmm. that tiny detail that thing I'm trying to accomplish. And that's why, I mean, it's funny because I think that, that's why, and I don't know if you wanted to even go here, but I've had, you know, addiction issues in my past is, substances are a way to just quiet everything.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. just turn down the volume on the chaos in your head.
You've talked about, and one of the things I admire so much about you is you've talked about your mental health quite a few times. I think you mentioned it once, but not like in any great detail about the addiction stuff. I remember hearing you talk about it once, but not in like great detail. And I'm always impressed by how open you are about it. Like, I think BetterHelp was one of your sponsors for a while, but it wasn't like an ad read when you were talking about it. Like, I could tell like it meant something to you and it was important to you. And it's really interesting to see people. I'm very open about my own mental health. Also, I've been over the years. It's one of the things that I stopped feeling ashamed about. You know, I've dealt with depression, dealt with anxiety, went to therapy for a while to kind of get myself sorted out a little bit. And it definitely was worth doing.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like it's something I need. After I started dealing with it, it felt less like something I needed to be ashamed of. And I've always been impressed by how open you are about how the stuff you've dealt with over the years.
Well, yeah, I mean, my philosophy is I really don't have a whole lot of sacred things about me. Like, there's not a whole lot of things that I consider sacred information that mm-hmm. needs to be hidden or not talked about, especially when it's something like your brain. You know, everyone, your brain is like the most complicated organ you have. Mm-hmm. People get problems with their organs all the time. You know, sure. A brain is just another organ that can have problems. And now I don't know how many of my issues are self-inflicted due to the drug use or alcohol use over the years. You know, by the way, I'm like, you know, I still struggle. Like, I'll occasionally drink or mess up or whatever. I mean, no hard drugs, you know.
Right.
But yeah, back in the day, it was really, it got really bad, you know, like really bad. Went to rehab, overdosed, and been through the whole wow. thing. At one point, I was panhandling for money, you know, to get drugs, you know. The thing that really kind of changed my trajectory was meeting Nicole, my wife. It was like, I don't know, I had this weird, like, sort of disregard for my own life or mm-hmm. Anything, you know. I also had a very weird upbringing, very sheltered, super controlling, homeschool, home church, sheltered from everything from the outside world and everything. That's kind of why I went crazy and rebelled against
That's usually what ends up happening. You kind of just completely veer off in the other direction.
I took a nosedive into self-destructive behavior as soon as I left at 17 and on very bad terms, and immediately was just like, anything I can get my hands on. Like, it didn't matter what. I mean, in literally anything. I've done, you know, the worst drugs you can imagine. And I don't know. A lot of people say, you know, all the things you do along your life are what help shape you, and that therefore they're glad that they happened. But I'm not, because I do feel like I have some residual problems because, you know, here's the thing is there's no way to know for sure, because I can't go back and undo that and then see how I'd be. But like, you know, I've had horrible anxiety and depression and like totally disruptive, like my anxiety, probably the worst thing, not a social anxiety, but like an anxiety typically triggered by something that happens in my mm-hmm. body. Like, my heart will flutter or I'll feel a weird pain or something like that. And I think I'm dying, you know, kind of a thing.
Oh, wow.
And that's gotten a lot better, but I wonder how bad it would have been if I hadn't done drugs as extreme, you know, and as long as I did. It wasn't for a horribly long period of time, but, you know, I know stuff like that. Yeah, it was long enough that I know I did damage to myself. Yeah, the anxiety was definitely one of the hardest parts of my life that I've been through. Was that what's the word? It was debilitating, you mm-hmm. know, where I was having multiple full-on panic attacks a day, followed by just super high levels of generalized anxiety every day, all day. And it made me cynical. And a lot of people don't think that, they probably assume that I'm like just a happy guy and stuff all the time, but like, I'm sure the people that watch can see the darkness that's sometimes there that comes out, you know,
peeks out every once in a while. Yeah. I also
like weird and kind of the scary genre and stuff a lot mm-hmm. too. But, I used to be like, if you ask Nicole, I used to be the happiest person, always looking on the bright side, saw the good in everything. And going through that changed me, not in a good way. And so that's what I'm saying is, I don't know for a fact, but I'm guessing it didn't help. The drug use didn't help the right. anxiety later on in my life, which then actually did change me in much more negative ways. I'm working on it. You know, that's the thing is I am going to therapy still. I don't have the panic attacks like I used to. It's one of those things where you can kind of grow out of it. And I have mm-hmm. to a large extent. I don't even know where I'm going with this. I'm going kind of rabbit trail, but it's just one of those things that I know I'm bouncing around. So like back to mental health, I never understood the stigma that some people have or the apprehension or the holding back of talking about something like that. So it never even really occurred to me. I was mm-hmm. also very sheltered. So I wasn't, that's the thing about me. Like I had to learn what society was like. I had to learn what people outside of my very close bubble of homeschool kids was like. I wasn't exposed to it. So I didn't have that influence to teach me that I should be ashamed about something like that. Mm-hmm. Or that there were certain societal expectations about behavior, you know, that's gotten me into trouble. You know, I don't think about what other people are thinking about me a lot of times in public, just because I just didn't have that constant reminder growing up. You know, I was so sheltered that it just didn't infiltrate my mind when I was younger. So part of that it's not like me. Oh, well, I'm just so open and great. It's partly because of, you know, nurture and how I was brought up, I think, to an extent as well.
You've been open to the point, like when I came up to you at Maker Camp, I was like, oh boy. Okay. Cause I know I kind of understand your way of thinking, and you were kind of like over by the pagoda over there, and you were just like taking a drink. And that's why I kind of approached you like a scary lion. I'm like, hey man, I don't want to bother you. I don't want to bother you, but if you're taking a drink, like it's cool. I'll come back. But I just wanted to say hi and talk to you for a bit. And you're like, come on over. And I'm like, okay. Cause I know what, you know, like the anxiety, especially in a place like that, where you're probably getting bombarded every 20 seconds from somebody who catches you. Because, I mean, even I was online to get my picture taken with Mark Adams, and I saw you out the corner of my eye, and I told, I was talking to Johnny Lambert. I was like, can you give me 1 second? I just have to go do this. Like, I have to go set. He's like, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Johnny Lambert. I know him.
And I was like, when I came over to you, and you were so nice and so kind, and you gave me so much of your time. And I was so in the back of my mind, like, don't take too much of his time. Let the man breathe. He's probably had a whole bunch of people up in his face all day long. Just let the man breathe. Let the man breathe. That's all I kept saying was let the man breathe. That's why I just like threw the idea of the podcast out. I'm like, hey, I'm bringing the podcast back. I'd love to have you on it sometime if that would work for you. And that was, I didn't want to like take too much of your time. But I think one of the reasons I was able to like, I don't usually regulate that well. I'm not going to lie. Like if I'm chatting with you, we could chat for an hour in a spot like that. But I think one of the reasons is because you've been so open about who you are and what your issues over the past have been. It's like, oh, I know he needs a breather. Like, he's got to need a breather after a day like this, because I needed a breather and I'm not anywhere near at the level you're at.
Yeah. Well, I mean, thank you. And I love talking to people and meeting people. That's the thing, is I don't get social anxiety. Like, I don't have a problem talking to people or about even what are even heavy topics or anything like that. Sometimes it just gets, it doesn't happen very often, but like sometimes at events, yeah, I'll just get tired physically. Oh,
I can imagine.
My voice gets shot, or I will say the hardest part, like say Maker Central, for example, meeting people is amazing. And I don't want to, like, it's always a good experience. But when you think about it, each person that comes to talk to you, I feel like I owe it to them to not only give my undivided attention, but to really listen to what they're saying. Right. And over hours of listening and also having process and give feedback and it be legit and real, and not just, yeah, thanks a lot, haha, whatever, you know, or yeah, whatever, sure, the superficial stuff. Because a lot of people have really deep stories or, you know, stuff that they want to tell me. It gets like not emotionally tiring. It's like more like
lot.
My brain just like turns to mush, you know, after
totally,
a bunch of hours of having to process intake and then give them a legit piece of yourself, you know.
Plus there's the whole parasocial relationship where, you know, you don't know who they are at all, but they know you.
it is interesting.
That was the first, because I'm just going to tell you now, like I said, I'm not at your level. I'm not trying to say like I empathize because I'm Bobby Doo, but
there's no levels happens, here. We're
it happened to me. It happened to me. People came up to me and they recognized me and they're like, oh, I love the podcast. I'm sorry. It's over. It was over at the time. Obviously now it's back, but I hope you bring it back. And I just wanted to let you know, I listen to it every Wednesday and I look forward to it. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't know who you are. I said, I actually wore I don't know if you remember, but I don't expect you to, but I wore a bright yellow shirt with my logo on the back. And I actually posted on my Instagram stories. I said, if you see me, come up to me, because I don't know who any of you are. And some people came up to me and said hi. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I can only imagine, like, at scale, what that must be like to have so many people who know you, but you don't know them. And it's like, wow, that's gotta be like a major freak out moment. It's gotta be.
Yeah. I'm used to it now. People don't.
No, but I mean, you've been in that position for a while.
It is interesting. But I feel honored, you know, like, and I have to take that in consideration as well when talking to people that I don't specifically know, but, I don't know. It is weird. I thought about it a few times. The sort of, like you said, parasocial. What exactly is the meaning of that? I've heard it in context.
It's basically a one-sided relationship where there's a social. You develop kind of a social affinity for somebody that you've never actually met. I feel like I know a lot about you, and I know you don't know a lot about me because you know, it's just the way it is. You're out there more. But I feel like if I had a conversation with you, I could talk about your life, but you really couldn't talk much about mine. I mean, maybe after today.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess I understood the meaning of the word correctly. I don't even know really what to say about it other than it is an interesting experience, you know, to have someone walk up to you who has an emotional connection that they feel that they have to you. So like one thing that I'm always just like, it's not bad weird, but it is still weird. It's a good
weird. It's weird. It is weird,
but
yeah.
When someone comes up and they tell me like, you know, I didn't commit suicide because of one of your videos, or like you helped me get through my brother, get through the hard times when a loved one died or something like that. It's just like, that's when it becomes like super heavy and like, wow, you know, it's just, you never realize all the things that the things that you may just think are just a throwaway joke or just, you know, just trying to make people laugh, you know, that can actually do way more than you expected. And it's a sense of responsibility that I feel and feel very honored, you know, to be able to be in that position to help people in any way I can. But yeah, it's an interesting experience.
Aside from being an artist at heart and, you know, having a deep love of making, creating and being a creative person, is that one of the things that keeps you going? Like, is it equal parts of I love to create stuff and people are like loving my stuff, like, and I mean something to them? Like, how much of it is like, is it mostly I want to create and I'm making videos about it? Or does some of these people really love my stuff and it matters to them and I really don't want to let them down? Like, how much of that is a balance that you do?
I mean, it's kind of all of the above, because even if YouTube didn't exist, I would still be making art.
Mm-hmm.
I may not be recording it and doing the videos and everything. But of course, the art it's interesting because, so the way I see it is my video is the thing people are consuming. The art is a prop, or it is a goal. It's a journey. The art is the end result of the journey.
Right.
But the video, and I'm a character in the video. So the video and art are two separate things to me. That now the video making process is an art form as well. Mm-hmm. It's a total creative outlet, you know, up until very recently. I mean, I've had a couple of videos where I've had some help with editing wise, but almost all the editing has been done by me. That's one of the things I'm working on, is trying to get help. That's why I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself, because I was going to start talking about why I haven't posted many videos. So your original question was how much of it drives me, the fact that people really enjoy watching me making it, versus how much am I doing it basically for myself?
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of about, like, it's, I don't know, like, I mean, there's a lot of factors. So it provides for my family and it's my job.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to keep putting videos out for that reason. That's one of them. Monetary reasons.
Right.
And the second is I love that it brings joy to people and hopefully inspires them to maybe give art a try if they're not already an artist. And if they are an artist, maybe they can learn something or, you know, get inspired to try some other avenue or area of art they haven't tried. Because I know for me, it's such a big, deep thing that I need. Like, you know, I have this overwhelming urge to do it. You know, it's almost mm-hmm. like an addiction in a way, in another kind of way. Then there's the videos that, because I love making people laugh and happy and entertained. So I don't know. It's kind of a hard way to answer. They're all their own unique thing. And it's hard for me to because I do it for me as well, but I do it for other people, but I do it also to pay the bills, you know? So it's mm-hmm. got a lot of facets to why. I don't know, all of the above. I know that's not a great answer, but
that's a great answer.
The other answer is I would still be doing it. I may not be making the videos, but I'd still be creating.
Still,
but
here's
the other question is, would I have attempted as many things or branched out into different mediums or tried to get as creative as I have become or in the videos if I didn't have an audience? That's a question. I think the answer would be I wouldn't have made as much art and I wouldn't have experimented and pushed myself as much.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, I think that it's like a feedback loop where the video and the response and everything helps to keep me wanting to push myself, not just to make it interesting, but to keep it interesting for the audience, but to keep it interesting for me. But then there's I don't know where I was going. But yeah, final answer. I don't know whatever I just said.
I never noticed it before because I primarily watch your videos on the Apple TV, primarily on like a large screen. Like, I don't really watch a lot of videos on the YouTube website. So normally in the process, when I have a guest on, I'll check out their socials, check out their YouTube, and, you know, just kind of get a feel for what they write about themselves. And your tagline on YouTube is, "I make art, so should you." And I really, really love that, because I do think that everybody has a creative outlet, whatever it is, whatever it is. You just, if you don't know what it is, it's just because you haven't found it yet, but you will find it if you keep pushing on it. What would, I know the general consensus, especially in our community, is to just get started, right? And we say that a lot and we hear it a lot, and it's kind of become the cliche, like, how do I get started doing that? And the answer is always just get started. I think that's a bullshit answer. I really do. I think it's the right concept, but I think the when something looks insurmountable, telling somebody to just jump into it is probably not the best advice. So what advice would you give to somebody who wants to get started, doesn't quite know what art they're going to be into making and wants to try to figure it out? What advice would you give to someone as first steps for figuring out where they fit into the world creatively?
Well, I would say find out what interests you. Like, if you find yourself watching way more painting videos or way more sculpting videos or wood carving, woodworking, wood turning, resin, mm-hmm. if one of those has really piqued your interest, that is maybe an indicator that it's something you would enjoy trying to make yourself, because it's already got your attention. And then do a little research. Watch some videos on the techniques. That way you're not frustrated right out the gate. You know, at least have a basic understanding. And YouTube is such a good resource. Literally anything you want to know about or learn, you know, you can find it on YouTube. So do a little bit of homework. Get a basic kit or, you know, the components that you would need, some basic tools or materials, whatever. And but don't go overboard. Get something. I know that's kind of a double-edged sword, because if you get crap tools mm-hmm. in the beginning, you may get frustrated by how sure. crappy they are. So it's like a balance in your budget. If you can afford something, you know, but you don't want to get into it and realize you hate it. And then you're stuck with all these tools too. So it's kind of right. a balancing act. But after all that, then is when I think a lot of people just sit and they keep thinking, well, I still need to accumulate tools. I still need to accumulate something or knowledge or whatever. That is when I think that just get started applies mm-hmm. because I still rely on that saying, the mentality of just start, because I can plan and problem solve in my head forever and toss ideas around and concepts and everything. Eventually you have to, this is what I'm making. I may not know all the steps yet, or even if it's going to be good or whatever, but there is a place for that, say, sure, definitely, sure. because that is the next step, is once you get a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of stuff in order to
then
do it.
It's just get started. Cause now you started. Now you have a path.
Yeah. Also maybe even look around and see if you can get creative in with what you have. That's part of what's awesome with art, is you don't need expensive materials and or expensive tools. You can literally take a rock and rub it against the concrete until you've created a shape, or a piece of pottery, like a broken. That's actually, even before wood carving, just memory, is I used to take broken terracotta pot shards. Hmm. And you know how a curb is kind of a rough right angle. I would uh-huh. find the ones with the sharpest edge, and I would grind it against the corner of the curb and create star patterns or,
oh wow.
And I used to actually, we had a, underneath our house was a pier and beam house, and I had a, like a little stash like of terracotta pots. Yeah. And I would take these pots. And so it wasn't always broken shards. I would cut, like almost like cut glass, but with mm-hmm. terracotta pots, and just scrape, literally just scraping against a concrete corner of a step or a curb. Wow. And made stuff cool enough to wear at my church. I gave them to people as friends or as gifts, and people started really wanting these cut things. So like, that's another thing too, is creativity is not just in the piece concept. It's in how you get there too. Right. You know, like
your process.
That's why creativity is such a huge thing. Like, everything and anything, everything in your house was all an original idea at some point, which is all because of creativity. You know, and I know that creativity, I don't know, it's probably a skill that you could learn. I'm sure it is. It's like muscle. Anything. The more you practice it.
Yeah, it's a muscle. It's like acts like a muscle, because the more you engage your creativity, the wider it gets, the stronger. Right.
Yeah, the area of my brain dedicated to creativity, mm-hmm. I've used it enough to where it might come a little easier, but everyone I think can get there. And yeah, anything, like, that's the thing, is like, even software writers who, you know, they're creatives in their own way. There's creatives in every aspect of life and every profession, everything. There's always some kind of creativity involved. So everyone does have it. If they're like, I'm not creative at all. Well, are you good at anything? Well, it takes creativity to be good in that thing, whatever it is.
Yep. You just haven't found your outlet. That's usually what it means. I mean, I've never met anyone that is completely void of creativity. You haven't found where you're creative. Even my ex-wife used to always say, I'm not a creative person. I'm not a creative person. I said, have you ever seen yourself in the kitchen? And she's like, well, I guess that counts. I was like, no, that counts. That counts. Like, you're a really good cook. Like, that's your area of creativity. You're a great cook.
So, yeah. Picking out a gift that's not necessarily, like, you can get creative on gift giving. There's a creativity in every aspect of life. Mm-hmm. I know you could say that for other things as well, but I think creativity is like one of the most important things humanity has. Because it's not only useful, but it can be used in just a way, just to make something look cool, you know, just for that reason. Like, I know a lot of, basically everything I've made is not practical. It's just for the aesthetic value.
There's a lot to be said about aesthetic value.
Well, thank you. And I mean, I agree. That's why I make it, because I like making things that I like, that I think look cool, you know? Mm-hmm. Just for the sake of it, you know, kind of like music. Music, I think, is a very similar sort of utility where it can bring people together. There can be a sense of community. There can be, you know, or just inducing emotions and things like that. That's what's interesting about art. But I will say, I think art does fit within definite, defined boundaries. It's not something, because if anything can be art, then nothing is art just as equally much. Just like you can take a guitar, throw it down the stairs. Is that music? No, it's noise. And it came from an instrument. But I think you could very much say, no, that is not music. That there has to be some intention behind it. And throwing a bunch of glass on the ground into a pile, a broken pile of glass, in my opinion, if it has to be in a museum, where you have to be told that it's art to know it's art, then it's probably not art. I know I'm very opinionated when it comes to being like, oh, you can't gatekeep art. You can't hold it in. Well, then it has
an opinion.
The word art has no meanings. If it does not fit inside of a category, like, you know, sorry, I get all irritated. Like the modern art movement, I think most of it's just some kind of
there's a lot of really bad modern art.
Tax loophole strategies or money laundering when it comes to, like, because when you see a white canvas that has been painted with white paint, so it just looks like a white canvas. I'm sorry, like, that's just a white canvas. So you just need to put the art on it, you know, or a pile of trash or something. You know, oh, it's so cerebral and deep. No, it's just a pile of trash.
My sophomore year of college, my girlfriend's best friend was manager at a gallery in Manhattan. So the kind of galleries we're talking about, like, people go in, they're all white walls and wood floors and people are drinking very expensive champagne. And she was like, hey, you know, the artists at this gallery opening are not terribly well known. We need some people to show up. Can you guys? And she, like, 10 of our friends, like, we all got together and we got dressed up and we went to this gallery opening. And I was walking around this gallery opening, and I, as someone who appreciates art, but is not, I'm not an amazing artist, right? I'm not going to put myself out there like that, but I appreciate art a lot. Like, I have a great appreciation, even if it's very simple art, like, I really enjoy it. And we walked into one of the rooms, and I'm never going to, as long as I live, I will never forget this. There were these plexiglass squares on the wall. You know, those standoffs that you use, the metal ones that keep, like when you make an award, that's a wood plaque and then the acrylic is separated with the standoffs.
Yeah.
Okay, so those four standoffs, they were all, that's what held it into the wall. And on the obverse side of the acrylic, they had basically taken axle grease and smeared it with their fingers in straight in lines. That was it. And it was a 5-piece work. It was $65,000.
Yeah.
And it had a sold tag under the name. And I was just like, I'm never going to understand modern art. And that was it for me. I was like, I I've seen very good modern art, you know, some, Saul.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's
Saul LeWitt is an amazing artist, right? But he's not putting axle grease on the back of a piece of acrylic and calling it art. He's doing incredible artwork. I can think of a bunch of modern artists that I've come to learn later in my life are really talented people, but I had a sour taste in my mouth after college seeing the art at this gallery opening that was selling like crazy. Like, I don't know if people are buying it because they're expected to buy it or if they're buying it because it's like, oh, well, we're at a gallery. Let's show off and show what we can buy. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. And there might be a sense of like, I can see the deeper meaning in this piece more than everyone else. Like some sort of like intellectual thing or pretentiousness. Mm-hmm. There's definitely some pretentiousness going on in the art world. Also, I think just like, it almost feels like a weird scam because I'm just like, no way someone's spending exactly. that much money on something that required such little effort.
This was one of those galleries where if you stood a mop up in the corner, 5 people would walk around it and one would try to buy it.
Like it was people like, have done stuff like that where someone literally left like an actual piece of trash. Where's a pineapple? I think they left a pineapple or something. People would take pictures of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, he even put like a little fake plaque. There's been all kinds of experience done like that just to show like, you know, it's getting into the realm of being insulting to artists,
to actual artists. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
And
yes.
I don't think that it's wrong to say that some things that are being passed off as art, I would not consider art.
That's not gatekeeping. You know, and that's being productive of something you love. Honestly,
right. That's the thing is that's why I'm so passionate about it because I mean there are great art. There's great art in every genre. Mm-hmm. But there are some things that are being passed off as art, like covertly somehow, and I don't, you know, it'd be well, like
everybody's trying to be subversive. You know, it's like I want to be a subversive artist, and it's like you're not being subversive; you're just being crappy.
I don't know, and I know that some people get all well. No, art is purely subjective, and it's like, but then it loses meaning if you can't if something has zero. Anything to sort of keep it in a category, then anything could be in that category, you know, and then it loses value.
People like to make that same argument with pornography where, you know, the famous statement from the Supreme Court guy said, I know it when I see it. Well, yeah, but there are still kind of like, even if the lines at the edges are fuzzy, there are still lines. It's the same with art. Like if I look at a piece of acrylic with axle grease on it, I can pretty confidently say that's not really art. Now, if he had done a pattern on the 5 pieces, like, okay, at least I can make the argument that that's art.
Right. You know? Art does not need to be context dependent.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that it was in a gallery, therefore
that's the only reason I knew it was
supposed
art.
To be art. But
exactly.
If that was off of its standoffs and leaning up against the wall in a warehouse, you'd say, wow, that's a dirty piece of plexiglass.
That's cool. You know? We could clean that up and use that for something else.
like if a song has to be in a specific environment before you know that it's supposed to be a song, then it probably isn't a song before, you know, if it's not like art shouldn't be context dependent.
I love that. I love that. I absolutely love that because that's a really good way to put it. Art should not be context dependent. You shouldn't have to see it in a gallery or a museum to know that it's art. I love that. Like, put that out on the street. Would you take it? Would the garbage truck take it? Or would somebody take it and put it in their home?
Right. I don't know how true it is, but I heard a story of like, it was an actual like pile of garbage in the corner. And it was supposed to be like some statement against society or waste or whatever. And the janitor of the museum threw it away because he thought that it was just some trash someone had left.
I have a very similar story to this. It's very funny because you said context dependent. So one of my favorite museums in New York, there's a museum called the Metropolitan Museum of Art has no, it's not the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It's the Museum of Modern Art, which of course means why the hell are you going there? But it's one of my favorite museums.
MoMA.
And they have up in Beacon, New York, which is, I don't know, about half hour south of Jimmy. They have a satellite site, and there's a couple of them around New York. And when you go in there, there's this one art exhibit, and I've tried to explain it to people. I've been there with people. I've showed it to them. And I think they're having the same reaction because it is very contextual. It's a pile of broken glass, but it's in a very specific shape on the floor. And you could tell it was formed into this shape. So you're like, okay, there's something going on here.
Yeah.
You go over to the wall. It's actually, the idea is, it's based on a map of Atlantis. Okay. And that's the glass dome landing as it shattered on the land that was Atlantis. So it's all in the shape of what Atlantis would be. You would have no idea. It's one of the coolest pieces of art there, but you would have no idea what the hell that was unless you looked at the card on the wall. So I love it. I love showing it to people because I think it's interesting, but yeah, it's very context dependent.
Yeah. Well, and then there's also the kinds of art where it is an actual pile of trash, but it's been arranged in a specific way that it casts a beautiful shadow on the wall behind it when a light is projected to one side. So that would be context dependent, but still the whole part, the art itself is also the shadow and anyone would be able to tell that that's art.
Sure.
Now if there's a bunch of glass been artfully arranged on the ground in a pattern, you know, that is art because you can
see
tell,
the pattern. You know, I mean, you just don't know what it is, but you kind of see it. And then
exactly. If it has it, and art, I feel, does have to have intention. Now, can art happen without intention? Like, say you accidentally spill a paint can on a canvas and it creates a really cool look, pattern or whatever. You know, is that art? It may not have had intention, but it may have been accidental art. That's where I haven't completely decided for myself where it lies, because like then you could take people like Jackson Pollock. Mm-hmm. He did have intention, but ultimately when he did that and the paint left his brush, he had no say of where exactly it was going to go, the droplet size, if there was going to be a string of paint, if it was going to be, you know, actual spots of paint. He didn't sit there and intentionally do that. He just kind of let physics take over after he flung the brush. I have my own sort of hybrid ideas behind that. I would call it art.
Right.
But in my opinion, it's not the only thing of real value of it is the originality behind it, because he's the first person to do that.
Sure.
I think there is value in a novel idea and thinking. Is it, I don't know, groundbreaking, or something crazy beautiful to look at? I don't know. Like, they're kind of interesting,
to an extent,
a Jackson Pollock, a bunch of just, you know, I don't know. I don't know. That's where my own opinions, I think there are some, I know that my stance on art is my opinion, but I think it's almost more than an opinion in a way. That the specific opinion on, does art need to have some kind of boundaries, even if they're fuzzy? I think that's kind of like just a truth. But
I think so. But
when it comes to stuff like Jackson Pollock and my opinions about that kind of stuff, that's more just my opinion. You know,
it's like they always say. It's all like they always say: you can break the rules, but you have to learn the rules first. You know, a lot of people that go to art school, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, every artist wants to be a rule breaker, but they don't even know what the rules are. They just know they want to break the rules. Like, okay, but what rule are you breaking? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that is true too. Cause like, yeah, I've created my own set of rules for art, and as long as it looks beautiful or interesting, or if you know, if it has some sort of aesthetic appeal, and it was made with intention, then, you know, for me, it's art.
How
personally,
much
in my art?
How much do you, and I don't know how to ask this without sounding like a jackass, but you understand where I'm coming from when I ask it. How much validation do you get from your audience versus how much do you just like, I'm just doing this because, you know, this is what I love to do? Like, do you find it validating when you put something out there and people go, oh, I love this? Or is it more of a like, well, that's cool, but that was what I was making, regardless of if anyone loved it or
like, well, I mean,
I'm not
no,
trying because... to paint you as a jerk or anything, but it's just like, I wonder, because, you know, when, especially with art, like how much of it is like, oh, I love the warm and fuzzies after I put something out. So,
The impact of comments and everyone heaping praise on me had more of a punch at the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's become kind of like, you know, every video I can expect a certain type of comment,
right?
Which is, it never is not awesome, but, it's less of an impact, if that makes sense. And I know that may sound kind of harsh because, but no, that's just the reality with anything, sense. With, you know, you will get desensitized to whatever. So the praise, you know, so I know it's an indication that I am making people happy, and obviously, you know, their comments will state that. Mm-hmm. So, of course it's validating to hear people literally in their words, validate what you're doing.
Right.
But over time it's, I don't focus on it as much.
Mm-hmm.
I still read comments, not as much as I used to, but I wouldn't say it's like a drive at all for why I do it. I don't do it for the validation.
Perfect.
I do it because it's an impulse.
Mm-hmm.
And the video is the thing that I, you know, I pay the bills with. I don't even sell the pieces I make, just mainly because I want to have some kind of an exhibition where people can come see it for themselves eventually. But
I love that idea.
Yeah, because like, I don't know. If I sold everything I had, then it would just be gone, you know, and sitting on someone's shelf. And eventually it probably will be, because I don't have to keep everything for sentimental reasons. It's more because my audience means a lot to me, and I feel like they deserve at least the opportunity to see stuff themselves if they want to.
I love it.
Anyway, so I don't even know if I answered your question. It was about being validated by comments primarily, but no, I, okay, cool. So yeah, the short answer is I still love the awesome comments, but I don't, it's not the driving force, you know, why I make the videos, you know.
I can't believe it, but we've been going an hour and 20 minutes, which is, I am so surprised.
Yeah, it's crazy.
By that,
I saw the time, and so I was like, "Man, I gotta pee." That's probably why.
Well, let's get over to things of the week before you end up sitting in a river of your own filth over there. I'm very curious to see what you brought to the table as a thing of the week, because I've always wanted a trip inside the mind of Bobby Duke. So, what do you have as your thing of the week?
Okay, my thing of the week is more just a weird science fact.
Okay.
About astronomy specifically. It's just a weird thing that I haven't really thought of, or a lot of people probably haven't thought of, but so we can't hear the sun because there's nothing for the sound. It's the sound it would be producing to propagate through. There's no air, mm-hmm. no molecules, or not. They're so attenuated in space in the vacuum that there's no way for that sound to get to us. But if there were some medium that the sound waves could travel through, it would be so loud that life on Earth would not have evolved ears, because the sound of the sun would have been so loud that communication verbally or with sound would have been pointless, because it would have been, you wouldn't be able to hear anything other than the incredible roar of the sun. And I just thought that was a weird,
that's an fact. Incredible fact.
Yeah, you know, it's just a weird thought. You know, thank goodness there's nothing but vacuum out there, or, you know, mostly vacuum, that for the sound can't reach it to Earth, because we'd all have no ears. I mean, not that sign language is bad, but we'd all be essentially earless and have to communicate via some other way than talking.
Wow.
Okay, is that okay?
Boy, my thing of the week suddenly doesn't feel as interesting anymore.
Oh, well, I was hoping that was going to be okay, because it wasn't like a physical thing. It was just more of a
fantastic. No, I love it.
I've learned.
We've had, over the years of doing this podcast, we've had everything from transcendental meditation to Utz cheese balls as thing of the week. So it's, I've come to expect the unexpected, but that's
cool.
That's an incredible fact. And now I'm gonna be chewing on that for days.
Yeah. So
my thing of the week, like I said, not anywhere near as interesting, but it's really a really cool thing. If you're an Adobe user and you have the Creative Suite, they have something in the Photoshop beta now called Generative Fill, which basically uses AI to fill in selections with what it would predict would be there based on what you prompt it to do. And let me just tell you something. If you have a lot of photos of people that you don't want to have in the photo, it is amazing at getting rid of people from photos. Huh. Like, I have done it twice for Kathy, my fiance. I've done it twice for her cousin, where there was a picture of someone she was dating.
You say you keep taking your fiance out of the photos.
No. That would be death. Her cousin was dating someone, and there's a lot of pictures of her and him. And every once in a while, I'll get one, and it'll be like, can you take him out of that one? Yeah, sure. Hold on. And it goes, and it works really, really well. And recently, they added something called, I forgot what they called it, but it's basically outcropping. So if you crop a photo beyond its borders, it will fill in, instead of just having a white border where the crop is bigger than the photo, it will actually continue the photo outside the crop. So you can reframe a photo where you don't actually have enough framing to do what you want to do with the new framing and the new aspect ratio. It's wild how well it works. And it's
interesting.
Only in the beta version. And I'm thinking, like, wow, can you imagine when this reaches full release? And, like, usually Adobe Max is like the first week or second week of October. So that's when it'll probably be a full release product. But I've just been having so much fun with it and doing, like, taking photos, reframing them, adjusting them, doing cool things with them. And it's just, it's fun to play with. I mean, do I have a practical use for it? Not yet. But I can see where, at some point, if I had a practical use, they'd be tools I'd be really glad to have. So definitely, if you have the Creative Cloud, definitely check out the Adobe Photoshop beta, because it's pretty impressive how well this whole generative fill and generative AI cropping thing that they did, good it really works.
That's interesting. I actually don't use Adobe. I have, I think, Adobe or something Adobe, because I tried learning it briefly and then gave up. It's very similar to what I use, which is Sony Vegas Pro.
Yes.
I've heard it called like a sister software. It's very similar.
It's very close.
I just found a lot more intuitive things with Vegas. It's also what I learned, so I'm also
And so it's funny, because that's the same thing with me in Premiere. I learned how to edit video many, many years ago on an old version of Premiere, and I learned how to edit audio. I didn't want to, I learned audio editing on Cool Edit, which later became Adobe Audition. So the two pieces of multimedia software that I learned first are now Adobe software. So it's like, okay, I'm kind of in that world. That's just where I'm going to be and I'm comfortable. But yeah, totally. If that's where you learned, that's where you need to stay.
Yeah.
That's where you'll be the most proficient, the most efficient also.
I have a question. I actually don't know what it's called. What is it called when it's no longer in beta? Like, what is the next, the final product?
It's just
the
general release, usually.
General release. See, yeah. I want to start a petition, because you know how you have, like, a master of a record?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the finished thing of the record. We should just call it, once it gets to the final iteration, just call it Master Beta. Why not? Petition to change the final rendition into Master Beta, because then everyone would laugh when they say it.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Hopefully that wasn't you.
I love it. Now I want to take a second and thank the people that pay for that kind of content. And those people include Best Man Al Schultz from New York Woodworks, Scott Orm of Dad It Yourself DIY, Ed Swanson from Ed's Clocks and More, Nick Birchtold of Birchtold Design Build, Tori Decker of Tori Did It, Jake Drews of Make With Jake, Megan Chris from Onyx Designs Woodwork, Christian Neary from Warren Works, Ken Madden from Mad Case Studios, David Wood of DW Wood Builds, Dean Duplantis, Chris Raley of Route 9 Signs, Jeff Stein, a.k.a. A Weird Guy, Kim and Garrett from Kim and Garrett Make It, Rory Langefeld of RLO Woodworks and DIY, Robert J. Keller, Brian Arsenault, the Seven Hills Maker, Dave Bauer of Dave Bauer Art, Donald LeBlanc of Fun with Woodworking, Ross Cave, Jeremy Spies, Grant Alexander from the Clamp Podcast, Brad Harrison of Brad Customs, and Billy Poulton of Poulton Projects. Thank you so much for supporting the show financially. It means the world to me. If you can't support the show financially, I completely understand. Feel free to share the show, leave a review, go watch the YouTube playlist for a while, you know, get those watch hours up. That always helps. Every little bit that you do to help spread the word about the podcast helps. And that when I tell someone of the magnitude of Bobby Duke that I have a podcast, he actually believes me. And that's very important. Believability is everything in this business. So thank you so much for everything you do to bring the show to other people and to help me keep doing it week after week. Bobby, it has been an absolute pleasure, man. I've been looking forward to this like crazy since we finally set a date for the recording. And cool.
Me too.
It's been everything. It's been everything I dreamed it would be. Talking to you is like talking to you was like the Holy Grail, because I've been doing this podcast since 2019. And you were one of those guests where I was always like, one day I'm going to talk to him. One day I'm going to talk to him. One day I'm going to talk to him. And then I saw you at Maker Camp and the rest is history. But thank you so much for coming on, giving me so much of your time. I really appreciate it. I know how busy you are. And it means the world to me that you'd come on my humble little show and chat with me for a while.
Of course. I appreciate being asked. And it's been really great talking to you. Seriously.
If somebody is living under a rock in the middle of the Sahara Desert and they haven't watched your YouTube channel or don't know where to find you, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at theyoutubes.com, and my channel is just called Bobby Duke Arts, and then Bobby Duke Arts on, I think, pretty much any other platform as well.
Awesome. If you're not following Bobby, I mean, I was telling Bobby before we got started, Kathy and I, everybody, you all know that Kathy and I were in Baltimore last week, and we were sitting at the table, and one of her friends, hi Bethy, if you're listening, of her friends was sitting there, and she's like, Bobby Duke? Like, you're going to actually talk to Bobby Duke? I know Bobby Duke. I've been watching him forever. That's awesome. So there you go. You're outside the maker community into the streaming radio DJ community. So just so you know.
Oh, sweet. Nice.
That's going to do it for this week. Next week, we have John from Gen X Grown Up, who I'm recording with in 2 days. And then after that, as I said a couple of days ago, we have Ray Sussman, who's going to talk about 3D printing, AI art, all that kind of stuff. So good shows coming up, lots of guests and lots of guests coming after that. So stay tuned. I hope to see you next week. Until then, have a great week, everybody.